Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we are sitting down with Jasper William Cartwright. Jasper is the co-owner of 12 Sided Studios, which is the TTRPG production company behind shows like Oaths and Empires, Three Black Halflings and Thresher, games like the upcoming Force of Extinction, and live events like World's Lair and the Winged Bowl Tavern. Jasper, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. It's lovely to see you, and it's very cool to be back. This is legitimately one of my favorite shows that I've been on. I'm such a nerd. I love talking about the industry. Like, I love talking industry stuff. So it's like, it's very rare that I get to do that. Most people are just like, oh, what was it like playing a stoat? And I'm like, no, ask me about like balance. So
I don't know, it was furry, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I had lightning powers. Whatever. It's boring. Let me tell you about tax returns.
Oh, we love tax returns. And that's the rest of this conversation. Get ready.
You're giving us permission to get really nerdy and nitty gritty. Oh, we're thrilled.
Yeah. So Jasper, it's great to have you back. In the year and a half and maybe 2 years since we last talked to you, you did a big thing. You started 12 Sided Studios, this company, this production company that is doing so much. And we want to talk all about that, kind of the process of building this company, lessons you've learned, like what you guys are all doing and like where it's headed and all that. Mm-hmm. But for anybody at home who doesn't know, could you tell us what 12 Sided Studios is?
Yeah, for sure. So 12 Sided Studios is the kind of brainchild of myself and Chad Pytel, who's my co-founder. We had been like chatting for a little while about working together, and he'd actually like jumped in to help Three Black Halflings and was like a big kind of like, you know, champion of that show and wanted it to be like the biggest and best and baddest thing that it could be. And honestly, like most things in my life, it started getting a little tipsy in a pub, like genuinely, like, you know, I started doing Rotating Heroes because I got a little tipsy in the pub. I started doing D&D because I got a little tipsy in a pub. I started 12 Sided Studios because I got a little tipsy in a pub. And I kind of just said, like, I've always had this dream of owning a production studio, and I feel like this industry is kind of ready for more, you know, kind of folks to jump in and kind of offer the tools that a lot of other industries have at their fingertips, right? And it was genuinely, that was the thought process, was like, can we provide the kind of services that when we were starting out, I kind of wish there was someone we could have gone to, you know, to like help us, you know? Cause like I had to, you know, when we started Three Black Halflings, I was like, ah, where do I get a logo? Or where do I get like, you know, character art? Or actually getting character art is easy, cause it's like so many artists are like incredible on socials. But like, you know, how do I get advice about like what to do with Patreon, or how to market this thing, or who to email, or, you know, how to put a press release together, like, you know, like crazy little things like that. And so it felt like there was just this like, you know, opportunity. And I did kind of the only sensible thing, which is immediately we decided we were going to do it. And then I immediately panicked and was like, we're never going to get any money. What are we going to do? And so I had, I can't tell you how many hours I spent planning out my like YouTube and Twitch strategy. You know, where I was going to like, okay, if I become like really big on YouTube and Twitch, then maybe we'll get work like that way. And then I remember I filmed one video, and by the time in between filming that video and editing it to then put it up, we got 4 clients, and I was like, sick, never doing that again. Not doing that anymore. you know, so that kind of went out the window, and we very fortunately, you know, had a bunch of people that were like willing to kind of jump in with us and trust us to like do the work essentially right from the off, which was amazing. And then, yeah, so we kind of set out with this idea of a production company to work on podcasts and videos. And it's really evolved since then through a lot of like really fun conversations, which usually go something like, hey, can you do? And I go, yeah. and then we figure it out afterwards, you know? So that's how we kind of ended up doing, you know, some of the more live event stuff. The game Force of Extinction was in kind of the works before 12 Sided Studios, and then it kind of just got to a point where it made a lot of sense to bring it into the fold. And so a lot of the kind of growth and sort of new ventures and new things that we've started doing are a little more organic.
You were saying about you wanted to be able to offer a bunch of services to folks, like, if they were in your position when you were coming up, tell people what all stuff you guys do and, like let people know what they should reach out to you about if they're interested in learning more.
Yeah, sure. It's just, like, I always just kind of, the way I like to think of it is, like, if you have a creative endeavor and there's any task that you don't want to do or don't like doing, just drop us an email. Because basically we'll either be able to do it and help you out with it, or we'll know someone who can do it really well and we can put you in touch with them, right? Like, I kind of view that as, like, our superpower is that we can be a hub in that way and sort of say, like, hey, like, even if we can't directly help you, we can point you in the direction of someone that can. So whether that's, like, podcast editing or, you know, trying to get artwork or, like, really nice, like, premium feeling graphic design, you know, podcast strategy, marketing strategy, you know, live show production, like, all of those kinds of things. Like, you know, oh, we want to do a live show, but we don't know what mics to get or what this to do, or, you know, like, all those things. Because, like, half the time we have it, like, I've just got a bunch of mics and cameras and stuff like that. So it's like, if you, you know, have an idea, but you don't really know, there's, like, areas that you're unsure of the execution, then, like, then let us know, basically. Because we've yet to kind of come up against a problem where we go, actually, I have no idea how we would do that. I'm so sorry. Like, we literally figured out, because some friends of mine over at Roll and Play Press reached out to us and was like, hey, we've got a, we wondered if you guys fancied making a video for our new Kickstarter. And I saw on the front cover this gorgeous little canary in, like, a minecart. And I was like, I really want to animate that canary. I'm going to go away and figure out if we can do that. And then, like, basically found, like, the most incredible human being, shout out to Alice, who is able to just, who animates just the most stunning pieces and things for us. And now we have this, like, you know, one of our, like, the most popular things we do is we make, like, animated trailers for people. And they look, like, genuinely, like, every time I see them, I'm, like, so riddled with, like, British insecurities. Every time I see them, I'm like, we rule. Like, we are so cool. Like, you know, like, we did the coolest thing. And it's just been, like, a really, you know, finding little things like that has been absolutely amazing. So, yeah, if there's a thing where you're like, oh, man, I would love to achieve this, then yeah, drop us an email. You can find me at jasper@12sidedstudios. Oh, there's also, like, contact forms and stuff on our website. You can reach out that way. But, you know, and also if you just want advice, you know, I will warn you, though, if you're like, hey, we're four white guys and we want to do a Viking podcast, I might be like, okay, cool.
Okay, good luck.
Yeah, enjoy that, I guess. You know, good for you. That's awesome. I'm joking. I love Vikings.
Well, so that's interesting, because I did want to ask, like, you're casting this huge net, right? Like, of, like, hey, bring us your creative problem. But when it comes to, like, the successful collaborations and projects, what are, do you find, like, through lines or guiding lights that, like, you're like, this is a 12-sided studios project, like, this fits our wheelhouse, this fits our ethos?
Yeah, I think they tend to be the ones where we can get more involved, in that, like, I think we've assembled such a good team that has, like, really great instincts in terms of, you know, like, what the heart of a project is. And, like, a lot of the time we find that, like, when we really give the clients the value, it's, like, we can, like, get to the heart of a project and, like, see what the heart of a project is that maybe they're too close to see. And, like, I have this all the time, right? Like, this is the reason why I rely on my team so heavily, where, you know, like, O's and Empires, for instance, like, I remember we had, like, a kickoff call and I'd been thinking about it over and over my head. And I was like, hey guys, and I presented them the world and everything. And they just, like, started firing off, like, ideas about, like, oh, we could do this and we could do this. And they actually then ended up bringing ideas. Like, we have, these, like, family runes, right? They're these, we've already, like, posted some of them online and stuff. And they're, like, our header on Patreon. And it's essentially, like, these little, like, almost like identifiers, because people on this island don't have last names. And so they're like, oh, what if they had these little things? And that's, like, a great, like, asset that we can then use to, like, talk about the show, but also maybe, like, fans can get involved and they can make their own family runes and, like, make up characters in the world. And I was like, okay, that's, like, freaking genius. And then that family rune thing has now become, like, such a crucial and integral part of the story, you know? And I'm like, and actually has really, and it kind of really hit at, like, the core of something that I was trying to tell, right? Which is that, like, this this like island that is, you know, it's all about community, and that if you don't have each other to rely on and to sort of, you know, stand next to you, then like you have nothing. And actually this Family Ruins was like a perfect embodiment of that. And so that was like an example of my own project where the team really helped me out. And I feel like whenever a client kind of comes in and is willing to kind of trust us to help them in that way, or, you know, be open to those kind of ideas, that, you know, the team is just so brilliant at kind of like understanding those things and being like, yeah, we want to like get involved in it. And honestly, it's because they're all a bunch of nerds and they just love it, right? Like they're all just like, we, you know, they just eat this stuff for lunch. They, you know, it's like their favorite thing to do is just sit and like spitball ideas and help someone's, you know, creative vision come to fruition in like the best way that it possibly can. Like it, I mean, that's literally been like the driving force for myself as a creative since I like left drama school, was just like, I am obsessed with helping, you know, like seeing a creative vision, you know, come to fruition. Like that is like the most gratifying, you know, thing possible is, and I get it all the time. Like I literally just got some music through Frozen Empires this morning, and I was like literally jumping up and down on my seat like a little child, just like, oh, this is so sick, because it genuinely just, you know, it fills me with so much joy to like feel, you know, just see other people produce awesome stuff, you know. It's just like it's really, really cool and really fulfilling.
Oh yeah, that's the best stuff. That's the best shit about working in RPGs, I find, is like getting to pay creative people to do their thing.
Yeah, it literally isn't the best. Like, there's so many freaking talented people. You know what I mean? You're like, oh man, like I'm so glad that I found you and that I'm like getting to watch you do your stuff. Like, it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a fun connection to the last time we had you on the show. And you talked a lot about, you know, this was kind of fresh off your D20 run, and you talked a lot about how for you it's not about the end result, it's about respecting the work and you know, honoring the work. You know, it's not, the work is not a grind to get to the result, the work is the thing. You know, you respect and enjoy the process of the fun of the work. How does 12 Sided sort of support that kind of continuation of this perspective you have on creativity?
Man, that's a sick question. Like, I think it's like, it's just really, like, it's genuinely so fun. Like, we have such a good, like, team who I think are, like, even though we kind of work quite, like, separately in our own things, like, when you see then things starting to come together and, like, people kind of bouncing off each other, like, we, you know, someone reached out to us about making music for Frozen Empires, and then I, like, showed that to our audio designer, and, like, he was, like, having the same reaction where he's, like, a kid in a candy shop. He's like, oh, I've got so many more tools now. Like, this is the best. Like, you know, so I think like seeing how the team is able to like support each other. And one of my favorite things, this is like started happening quite a lot recently, which is like, actually this happened a lot with the Wing Bull Tavern, for instance, where I essentially was like taking a lot of work like off of other people so they could focus on that. And I remember like rocking up to PAX Unplugged being like, I honestly don't have a clue what this is going to look like. Like, this wasn't my project. Like, it's my company and whatever. But like, essentially I was like, I really trusted it to the team. And I literally, my jaw was on the floor and I was like, this is incredible. Like, how did we do that? You know, how do we do this? And it was that was like so amazing to know that like people are enjoying that work off on their own, and it's not reliant on me to be like the epicenter or the plug that's kind of blocking the sink kind of thing. You know, that people are like off, you know, pursuing these creative endeavors and making really cool stuff happen. Like outside of me, like that I find really, really satisfying, and definitely feeds into that sense that like, oh, we're kind of doing what we set out to do, which is like to try and create stuff that we felt like was a value and that people would really, you know, respond to and enjoy. And generally I feel like, you know, the team again, like really enjoys that. Like they love nothing more than when we have those kickoff calls and we start talking about a brand new project and all of the possibilities and things like that. Like, it's just, it's awesome.
Over the past, like, since we last had you on, like, year and a half, 2 years ago, this whole studio has come into being and has, like, grown pretty quickly to do, like, a lot of stuff. How has that process been for you, like, just, like, navigating that growth, but also, like, navigating, like, as you said, you walked into the Wing Bull Tavern not fully knowing what it was going to look like. And I imagine from even my own experience, like, letting your hands off the steering wheel the car drive itself with other people can be scary, intimidating, but also thrilling. How has that process been for you? And like, where have you found success and where have you like struggled with failure?
I, incredibly taxing on my mental health. And I'll kind of like, you know, and I genuinely will be like pretty open about the fact that like letting go of the steering wheel is like one of the hardest things I think I've ever done. Right. And, but it was the consistent source of failure for us as a company. And probably even now, right, is still, you know, where I just don't like give someone like just enough freedom, or I, you know, or I don't bring them in early enough, or whatever it may be, because you, this is something that I've really, really had to come to grips with, which is that like, if you are gonna, the reason you start a company is because you're kind of going, hey, there are people around me that I trust enough to get this work done and to do this thing. And the number one mistake that I feel like I see when, you know, people are starting companies or shows together or whatever, is that they are not willing to rely on someone else. And now I'd come from a place of like not quite being able to rely on people, like, you know, with like other personal projects and stuff that I'd tried, you know, like how many short films that I'd tried to get off the ground, and people have been like, yeah, so excited. And then actually like, you know, not turned up or whatever. So like I'd come from a place of like having gotten burned, and like the only reason that I was a producer in the first place was because I was the only one of my friends that wasn't terrible at it. You know, it wasn't that I kind of woke up one day and was like, I want to produce, show me spreadsheets. You know, I didn't like, I didn't wake up with that love and passion. I've just sort of Stockholm syndromed myself into enjoying it. But like generally, yeah. I think, that's real. Yeah, exactly. Like, you get it. But I think generally I feel like it was like, I wasn't awful at it. So I kind of stumbled into it. And then from that point, I was like, okay, well, I'm here now. Can I kind of get to grips with it? Can I, you know, start to enjoy it? But then that kind of meant that I was kind of very used to being the person that everyone would go through, right? And then as you kind of did with my slightly ludicrously long intro, talked about all the things we're doing, I'm like, oh, I can't do that anymore. Like, I really can't do that. Like, I'm going to mess everyone up if I'm now that point of focus. And it really was difficult. Like, it genuinely was difficult. And I think it's a skill that I am still honing. I think it's a skill that I will continue to hone. And I reckon I get there by the time I'm 50. You know, like I get to a point where I'm like, yeah, I really know how to delegate properly. Because every project is different, right? Every project is different. Every person is different. Every like, you know, staff member that you bring in or freelancer that you bring in will require a different level of oversight or your involvement. Some people I have that I work with, I'm like, hey, here's the brief, bye. And they're like, cool. And they slam the door behind them. And they're like, do not talk to me until I am done. And then they will emerge with this like stunning piece of art. And I'm like, how have you done that? Right? From my like terrible brief, like my art director, I'm not joking, will send him the most insane. I will send you some of the drawings if you want, along with the finished pieces of art, right? Like that you can put up, because genuinely it's like it's ridiculous. Some of the things that he has drawn based on like the chicken scratch that I have put down on pieces of paper, you know, but he's very much like, you know, I give him that and then he runs and he makes something beautiful. You know, there are other people and that, you know, no one way is better than another. There are some people who really want to be, you know, hey, want to check in and be like, am I on the right path? I'm on the right path. Then we work together and it's a real collaboration where we're like honing and honing and honing until eventually we find something that we're both like really, really, really happy with. And, you know, we kind of run from there. So I think it's like, it's really a process of honestly, like listening is probably like I know it sounds kind of like cheesy and I feel like everyone says this, right? But like learning to just really listen to the individuals that are around you and like, what do they need? You know, sometimes it's like a bit of tough love, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, you do kind of be like, you know, like it's okay. Sometimes it's like alleviating responsibility. It's about saying, hey, just so you know, like, I know that you're amazing and you're doing the work and you're doing a great job. So I want you to know that even if this project fails, that's not on you, right? Or if we don't make money or whatever, that's not on you. That's not on your work, right? Because some people will take that, you know, personally or like they'll internalize that stuff. And so it's really about listening and trying to figure out kind of where someone's at in that particular moment and trying to meet them with the right amount of energy. And it does kind of require a bit of like ego death, I think, because I think, you know, I think that there's a lot of people that kind of get into positions of power because they're like used to it and they have a kind of like, I know the right thing to do all the time. And you definitely need some ego, but you also really need to be able to be like, hey, I'm going to sacrifice how I'm feeling in this moment to make sure that you're taken care of, right? Because, like, I've decided to put myself in a position of power and whatever, and so I don't abuse that relationship, I need to make sure that, like, you feel as supported as humanly possible. Because there's times where I'm like seconds away from having a full mental breakdown, you know, full little menti B on a Zoom call, you know, and like, you know, and outwardly I'm just like, yeah, I like, listen, like, we'll try, you know, if the dates don't line up or if the project falls through, that's okay. You know, and then I get off the call and I'm like, no, my God, like, but I can't, you know, it's like, yeah, exactly. You know, but I'm like, I've made a very conscious decision. Like, that is something that, like, I won't lie to my stuff. You know what I mean? Like, if there is a genuine problem or whatever, then of course I'm going to be honest about it. But I'm never going to be like, I'm never going to put my emotions on them. Which, again, it's tricky sometimes when you're in the moment receiving bad news and you're like, oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. it could definitely be a wild ride.
I know recently we, for the longest time on our Actual Play podcast, My First Dungeon, I was the only sound designer and like sole editor. And we got to the end of 2024. I was editing our Wild CCs and I was also editing Bitcherton. And I think I was doing some of Talk of the Table and I had some like other side projects and I fully like burnt out. And for our next like big season, we brought in, for our Slugblaster season, we brought in our good friend Jay Stroutman, who did half of the sound design. And I knew Jay was great. I had no doubts in my mind about their capabilities, but I was letting my hands off the wheel a little bit. And I was like, but it's mine a little bit. And then I was very happy when like I got back Jay's like first pass at the sound design for episode two. And within like the first 5 or 6 minutes, there was a choice that they had made with the sound design that I wouldn't have made. Not that it was bad, but that it was just something I truly never would have thought. It was like just a chair squeak or something. But in my head, I was like, "Oh, what was that?
Yeah,
that was
And
it was really, you know, it was a great experience because, you know, by adding in more collaborators, stuff's going to get better over the long run. And immediately, I was immediately comforted by the fact that I was like, okay, Brian, you're fine. Other people can do this too. But also, it was a real gift that Jay gave to me that I didn't really think about before, where for time immemorial, I had not been surprised by my own show.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I got to listen to it and get surprised. I was like, oh, what a treat. What a joy to get to listen to something with fresh ears and not just by letting your hands off the wheel. You get to see, you get to be surprised by it a little bit, which is great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, truly, I got to I got to a point where, well, to be honest, actually, what led me to be able to do that is two things, which is one, I got really sick of the sound of my own voice. I mean, I cannot stand it, guys. Like, it, like editing for 400-500 plus episodes, it's just like, no, thank you. So that was a problem for me. But also, and this is like, you know, something that I carry like in my soul, I am like so unprecious about ideas, which is like kind of like only works if you then surround yourself with like perfectionists. You know what I mean? Because if you surround yourself with people who like kind of don't take it seriously or whatever, then you can just end up with like a sloppy project, right? Or whatever. But I think if you surround yourself with people who are like, who have, because one thing I realized is like, I can't sit still long enough to work on just like one project. Like, I just don't have like mental fortitude. I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? Like, I can't, like, I don't know how Brennan and Matt do it, you know, where it's just like, they go into like a dark zone and they think of these like the most insane, the biggest sprawling worlds or whatever, you know, like I need to be thinking of 6 projects at the same time. Otherwise it's just not going to happen. But the only way that's possible, right, is if I surround myself with a really good team. And so my thing is like, can I surround myself with people where all they have to do is this one thing? They can put everything into this thing so that I can then sit up here across everything. And it means that like, honestly, like once a project is like out of my hands, I'm like, cool, let's see. You know, like if I, and it's really nice, honestly. Like I get hyper-focused on it and it's everything to me. And it means, you know, like, Echoes of the Father is a perfect example. We just did that one, went out on Brandon Sanderson's YouTube channel. I GM'd it. I read four Brandon Sanderson books in 2 months at the beginning of last year.
Which is insane.
Which is insane, by the way.
Massive, like, and only get massiver.
Yeah. They literally only get bigger. They start at like a thousand pages and only get longer, right?
I know the latest book, they had to like find a new way to bind it because it was too big.
Yeah, because it was just too big, too heavy. It's ridiculous. So I read four Brandon Sanderson books. I immersed myself like so fully in the world. And then that same weekend, so I GM'd Thresher and Echoes of the Father the same weekend. We did Echoes of the Father on the Saturday and then Thresher on the Sunday. And so like my son wasn't very serious, but like my son was in hospital the week before that. So when I say that like my brain was, I was at sea. If I didn't have the capacity to really rely on people around me, like that show just would never have happened. But it also means once then I did my thing on the day and they're like, hey, we'll just call you in when the edits are ready for you to like review. I'm so relaxed about them now because I'm like, well, I've seen that I can trust people, right? And like ultimately, if I can't trust someone or if something goes wrong and it doesn't work, I'm either going to like have a talk about it and we'll see if we can get better next time, or like we might not work together again, which would be a shame, but like it's not the end of the world. Like everyone's going to kind of, you know, move on and whatever. And I realized this, this is actually a relatively new revelation, which is that I'm actually terrified of something. And I think this is the first time I'm saying this publicly as well. So you get a scoop here. But it's just, not that there's a scoop to be had. But I think I'm terrified of making my magnum opus. Like genuinely, I think I'm actually terrified by the prospect that one day I'm going to make something and go, oh shit. That's it. It's not going to get better than that. You know, like, that's it. Like, I'm genuinely terrified, which is why I'm kind of like, at least right now, the kind of space, you know, the headspace. I mean, this might change in like 2 years when, you know, if I manage to get like a feature film or whatever made and I'm like, right, this is going to be my magnum opus or something. But like right now, I really feel like I'm just loving being creative and coming up with new things and generating new ideas. That the idea that one of those then becomes this thing where everyone's like, man, that thing you did, it's going to be hard to top that. Oh, it's going to kill me. It's going to kill me. What do you mean? What do you mean? Like, everything I do has to, like, everything I do in the moment has to be the best thing that I've done. Otherwise, I'm not like, you know, because I'm like, I need to incorporate the things I learn and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that kind of helps me to let go a bit because I'm like, this probably won't be the best thing you ever do. So just chill the fuck out. You know, like that's kind of how I feel.
I have been thinking a lot lately of like what I kind of want 2026 to look like for me. And a lot of it is like taking a step back. And I'm kind of thinking of it in like the way that I'm looking at taking swings at things. Like I think up till now, it's been like, I'm going to take a swing at like every episode. Like I'm thinking about it in like scenes or episode or like moments of sound design. Whereas now I kind of want to like step back and be like, I want to take this swing at this, like, I want to focus on this season, or I want to focus on, like, take a swing at a show. Like, making the shots that you are taking a wider and wider brush. But by doing that, it necessitates finding other people to help with these smaller and smaller brushes, because you can't focus on, you know, the tiny, tiny things. You have to focus on the wider swings.
Like, a question back to you guys, like, how have you found the process of, like, finding those people? Because I think it can be a balance, right? There's, like, there's certain people who you, like, oh, they're a ringer for sure, and then for one reason or other, it's, like, it maybe doesn't work out, or it doesn't quite sit, or, the you know, it's just not quite there. Like, or, you know, and other times you kind of just find someone, and then you, they turn something in, and you're like, oh my God, okay, that's incredible. Like, you're never going anywhere. Like, how have you found that process, like, now that you are opening stuff out to, like, bringing people in? Because I think it's a process that I feel like I'm still figuring out, right? It's, like, where to look and how to find the right people.
Elliot, I think you have more... I could speak to many-sided, but I think, Elliot, you could probably speak more to, like, your game design and, like, more blueberries.
Yeah. I don't know. I love, like... I guess, like, the big ones are, like, visual artists in particular. I love finding visual artists. I think that it's like I love to be a fan of someone or become a fan of someone and then want to hire them, like, and then like having the realization that I can hire them for a project, like, that's the shit. Like I've always been like just a visual art guy, and so there's a lot of artists online that like I love, and then sometimes it's like, then like for the time we have my latest production, I got to then be like, okay, what are the 12 artists I want to hire to each do a little piece of like insane sick art for this? So just kind of like, I love the idea of creating opportunities for myself to hire people that I am a fan of. And like, and go out into the marketplace, for lack of a better word, of creatives to find new people to be fans of, and like first be fans of them and then have them in my back pocket for like, you know, maybe there'll be a project someday where I can hire them. Or I often tell people when I meet them, I'm like, someday I want to hire you. I don't know what for.
I don't know what the
project is, but I think your art is sick, and I know it belongs in a beautiful book. I just don't know what that book is yet.
I have no idea.
I have a lot of fun with it. I mean, obviously you run into like roadblocks and stuff. Sometimes you hire someone and you have a bad experience, but I haven't had any truly terrible experiences, knock on wood.
No, neither me. But I think it is a really interesting, it's just a really interesting process when you start to, I think, open that perspective out a little bit and welcome people kind of like into what could feel like quite like an inner circle, right? Not to make it sound like too cliquey, but it is a bit like, hey, this is like a very small, you know, independent project. Like even when we're doing Thresher or whatever, like, I mean, in terms of like TV and film budgets, we're not even a micro budget, right? It's like infinitesimally
side letter
small
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like they would throw this away on catering for a day, you know? And I wish I was joking, but like, so you kind of, you know, so even though you are in a position where you're like, there is money available and you are actually working on a project, it still feels, still very much has that kind of like, almost like student film quality where you're a bit like, okay, but everyone kind of needs to, you know, like you're always kind of aware that you're asking someone to do like a little bit more than maybe you ideally would ask them if you had like all of the time and resources available. And so I think finding those people who are like able to like go along with that and embrace it, you know, has been amazing. And also it's like, I don't then take that trust from them in me for granted either, right? With a lot of people that we've brought in to the fold for 12 Sided, you know, it really started out where, you know, especially like shout out to my producer, Jess. Like, I just said to Jess, I was like, hey, I got this idea. What do you think? And Jess like quit a full-time job to come work for me, you know? Like that doesn't, that like takes a lot of like faith and trust. And so like, you know, any day that I'm like not feeling it or I'm struggling or whatever, I'm like, hey, like there's people that like have really shown a level of like trust and dedication and put faith into you, you know, you need to repay that, which is a great motivator, like a really, really good one.
It is helpful, though, that as you get more people that you can rely on, like even though, yes, they do depend on you, when you have days when you're not your best, they can help shoulder some of that burden. I mean, there's a certain amount of pressure that will always be on like the owner or the person, but like the more you can find people that you really can lean on when you need to, you know, take a rest, they can.
A perfect example. Like that 2 weeks before Thresher and Stormlight, right? This was a huge, huge like project, you know, two projects for the company, for me personally. I was GMing both of them. It's two of the biggest platforms I was ever going to have been on. And my son gets sick and I'm literally like in hospital for like 12 hours a day. And like, my phone signal is bad and I pretty much can't do anything other than like read Brandon Sanderson, honestly, you know? And so like during that time, in a normal circumstance as just a freelancer, I'm kind of screwed. Like, those projects probably don't happen. Like, they probably get shelved or, you know, cancelled or whatever. And because I had this incredible team around me, I remember like literally like crying like on the phone to like my mom being like, I'm just so proud of my team. Like, they really helped me out. Like, when I was unable, you know, whatever. Because it was just, I'd never had that experience before where I got messages from people just being like, I've already done it. Like, please, like, stop messaging me, stop thinking about this, and just go and be with your family. And that was like, I mean, that's like a gift that I could never, I could never have asked for. And it was just an incredible thing and an amazing kind of departure from, you know, what I had experienced kind of up until that point, you know, where you're just like a freelancer on your own. And if you're sick, then meh, you know, there's not really much you could do about it because you're probably not going to get paid. So. It's pretty tough.
I know the thing that I always found, I feel like I found this less in Many Sided just because we haven't done it as much yet. But when I was working in as an assistant director for television shows, you very quickly, almost immediately can like spot the, like if I was a first AD, I'd spot the PAs that were like the people who I was going to rely on. because all of a sudden you send them out on a task at some point, and it's something minor. It's you do this thing, and they've reported. You know, they tell you that they've done it. They get it done. They don't ask. They ask the necessary questions, but nothing else. And all of a sudden, like very quickly, you know, it's like, great, I've given this person a task. I don't have to worry about it. I know it's going to get done. And if it doesn't get done, they will be able to tell me like, hey, here's what happened. Can you help me solve this problem?
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what the absolute source is in that scenario is when you find out later that they ran into an issue and they just sorted it out without even bringing it to you. Whew, I'm buying you a box of cookies. Like that's like, do you know what I mean? Because like when you're in those situations, you're like, oh, I've already received like 50 issues today, you know? So like not having this extra one made genuinely so much difference.
there were times when I was on set as a first AD and like we've got 12 cameras running. I literally have two different walkie channels in my ear. Both of them are talking to me at the same time, both like giving me information, and I'm also talking to the host and like relaying stuff, like literally having three conversations at once. I cannot deal with whatever thing I gave to you. And I like, it's great when you have people in a position that understand what is happening. Like they recognize I have this task. I have to complete it. I don't have the option of going to this person because they're getting talked to by three people at the same time and expected to answer all of them. And I remember there were like moments on set where I'm like talking to someone and I'd be like popping different surveillances near my mouth and like having all three conversations. And you'd see like some PA would come over to you and they'd see you doing that. They'd be like, never mind. I'll come back. And I'm like, please, like, come back, but give me a second.
That was literally like me on Thresher and Stormlight. It was like, I was like, the second I stood up from the chair, I was no longer GM and I was now director. And so it'd be like, lighting guy would come over and ask me a question, or like the set dressing guys would come over and ask me a question. And I'd be like, okay, pat, 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 you know. And then I'd sit down and be like, ooh, dice. What do I do with these? it's fun though. And I do feel like days like that, you can't do them every day, but like there's nothing quite like when you get home after that day and you're like, I did the work today. I really did the work today.
It is thrilling to like be in the center of that, like to be in the center of a storm. Like everyone, especially on like a film set, knows that like the train is running. You either get on board or you get run over by it. Like it's not going to stop. And being able to like maneuver that unwieldy device around that is like a film or television set, or just like any production that has a lot of moving parts, is really thrilling and satisfying. And it's hard, but it's fun.
Oh, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And I remember, I remember on Thresher particularly, there's a scene where we actually break away from the table and everyone puts on these like diving helmets. And we do these little like two-person interactions where they're like tethered together and we're like ascending down into the darkness. And I think every single person on the production, including Critical Role, pushed back on that idea. Like, this is, I don't know, you know. And I was like, guys, I'm so, like, I know we're all here like later than we thought. And like, we've still got the diving scene to film. And you know, but I was like, please just like, we got to try this. We got to, you know, please let's try this. And then I remember like it came out and like, I had a couple people from CR being like, a diving scene was the best damn scene in the whole thing. And I was like, I told you it was going to work. I knew it. Like, I knew it was going to work. But it's like, and it's like, but trying to keep your kind of mental wherewithal when you're in those moments and you're like, you know, trying to like stay true to the integrity of like the thing that you're creating is like really a skill, because it's so easy to just be like, okay, what's like the easiest point from here to end of day? You know what I mean? Like, you know, when someone's like, hey, should we just cancel this or whatever? And you're like, no, sorry. You know what I mean? You have to like do that bit, which is like not comfortable, but it's like trying to keep the integrity of the thing is like super important.
And I think the tough part is that sometimes you do have to make that call. You do have to make the call of like, actually, we do have to cut that. And that's where it's like, there is that ripcord will have to be pulled at some point. It's getting as close as you can to not pulling it before you have to, which is a test of will.
It's good though, because it forces you to examine the necessity of that thing, right? Like it really forces, like, because when you're in pre-production, it's super easy to be like, oh yeah, we'll do this scene and we'll do this thing. And then, you know, when you're actually in it in the moment, you know, it really forces you to be like, do I need this? Is it worth the level of stress that's currently going on around me? You know? And But like, I think that's actually kind of useful. Like within the creative space where everything can feel a bit like nebulous and wishy-washy and like, there's no rules. Who want? Do whatever you want. Make a film. Don't make a film. You know, it can be really easy to then just be like, you know, to never kill your darlings or to never, you know, and actually I do think to a certain degree, like that pressure of just like getting something done and getting it in the can or whatever it is, you know, same with podcasts and stuff. It's good. And it helps refine projects as well. Like I, you know, feel the same way about podcasts. I personally don't like them being too long. There I said it. Mm-hmm. I know that's shots fired at a lot of people, you know, but I'm not a fan of a 4-hour actual play. I said it.
These two people.
Yeah. Okay, good. It's good. I'm glad I wasn't
shots fired at you. We're actively making all of our stuff shorter.
Dude, yeah. Honestly, O's and Empires, it's like 40 minutes to an hour an episode tops. I'm like, ooh.
I'd love to get our stuff good. Like, I'd love 45 to 75 minutes, I feel like is the sweet spot. Anywhere in there, it feels great.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. We've got, like, our final episode, it's like 1 hour 20. You know what I mean? It's like, ooh, sure. It's like a little, you know.
Oh, you're pushing it there.
We're pushing it. We're pushing it. But it's, it's not too bad. It's the talk of the
GameFound is inviting you to participate in their second RPG party, a curated event designed to help indie TTRPG creators bring their projects to life through crowdfunding. Whether you're working on a zine, a 600-page collection of tomes, or something more esoteric, this is a unique opportunity to move forward with real support, visibility, and expert feedback. Applications will be reviewed by a panel of judges from GameFound and industry partners like Darrington Press, Modiphius Entertainment, Free League Publishing, and Magpie Games. 15 to 25 projects will be selected to receive workshops with industry experts, marketing support, one-on-one mentorship, and a community of fellow designers to grow together. Open call for submissions lasts from May 5th to 26th, and crowdfunding goes live this fall. Let this be the push you need to manifest your game in the physical realm. It's going to be challenging, there's going to be stress, and if you're able to put in the work, it's going to be so incredibly rewarding. Go to gamefound.com/blog for more information and to submit your project today.
This episode was brought to you by the World Builders Club, a project of Working Families Power, an organization building power for the multiracial working class. The World Builders Club is your go-to dispatch for breaking down the political, cultural, and emotional architecture behind your favorite universes, from romantasy novels and TTRPGs to blockbuster franchises and indie gems. This isn't just pop culture analysis. It's a love letter to the art of creating worlds and the power those worlds have to shape our own. I'm a huge fan of post-apocalyptic world building, so I recommend starting with their piece, We Can't Stop Watching the World End, which talks about properties like GLaDLands, Fallout, and Silo, and what they have to say about humanity and our ability to imagine a world after the apocalypse. But any piece on World Builders Club is going to be a great read for those of us who love to imagine better worlds. So join the club and build a better world with them by subscribing at bit.ly/WBC Many-Sided or by searching World Builders Club on Substack.
In the far reaches of the world, under a lost and lonely hill, lies the forgotten Tomb of Corridors and all its many ills. This labyrinthine crypt filled with monsters, traps, and treasure seeks to destroy your mortal form and seal your soul forever. Originally called Tomb of Horrors, based off the original created in 1979. Included in my version of Tomb of Corridors will be its own background information, a legend of the tomb as it relates to the land of Hyrenor, and quite a few unserious hijinks. I'm Amelia Somm, and I will be your dungeon master. Embarking within the tomb, we also have
Haley as the Queen's Ravens,
Stella Jo as the Sacrificial Sisters of Alpha Kappa Mori,
Cyrus as a lesbian who keeps coming back wrong.
New episodes release on Mondays, wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know if this connects, but I think it illustrates something. And I don't know what it illustrates, but it's a fun story. So one of the shows that I worked on the longest was Beat Bobby Flay. So it's a competition reality show where chefs come on, they compete against each other, the winner gets to compete against Bobby Flay. And what we have during that show, we have a massive culinary department with a ton of stuff in the background. So everyone knows coming in what is available, but they also have runners out at various markets. So like there's a runner at the fish market, there's a runner at, you know, to get anything that's specialty. This all like does happen pretty live. We've recorded 2 full episodes in a day, one before lunch and one after lunch, which is crazy. We've done 3 a days too.
Oh my word. Bobby Flay must be tired.
Bobby Flay is a badass. He comes in, does his shit. Like he wants to get it done because then he has like a dinner shift at whatever restaurant he has. But we had a competition where we got to the final round where Bobby is facing someone. The person announces what dish they're going to be cooking. And then, you know, we stop down to do a brief like culinary check-in. And Bobby wants to cook something that requires a like protein, like the main protein that we don't have. And like they're calling people and they're saying like, hey, when can we get it here? And they're like, we're figuring it out. And Bobby decides we're going to start the competition without this thing, with my main protein. And you guys will have to get it here in like 20, like that cooking, that round is only 45 minutes. So you got to get it here in like 20 minutes. And the camera started rolling. We had, 10 cameras plus jib plus Steadicam all going. And that's it. Like, if you fail, Bobby Flay looks bad on television.
Yeah. Which is like the worst thing, like the worst possible outcome.
And hot damn. I mean, the culinary department on that show is phenomenal. Phenomenal culinary department. And they like, there's a moment 15 minutes in where like I'm looking at my watch, the first AD is looking at her watch, and all of a sudden we hear like flying in, like swordfish flying in or something, and you see this like culinary person running in, slams it on the table. Bobby immediately picks it up and like throws it in the pan, and like it was that close.
That's crazy. Oh my word, I love it. Like that thing is as well. No, but I guarantee you that runner, that is the story they tell at every dinner, every, like, do you know what I mean? Because, like, they must have felt like an absolute superhero. Like, do you know what I mean? To be like, boosh, it's just so
fish. It's not just,
we've got it, we've got it.
What's great about it is it wasn't just them. Like, it's the whole culinary department gets excited about it. And then, like, you know, everyone's like, I'm on walkie with the AD department, but also on with the whole, like, producing team, like, calling the show. Then the camera operators are on it, like hearing the director calling shots. So when the director knows, the camera operators know. And now all the camera operators are moving to let this guy in and also like track it coming in because now it's a story beat. And now like as this guy's leaving, the camera operator, like the jib operator's like smacking on the bag like, fuck yeah, dude, that was awesome. Like the whole crew
yeah,
gets
it's
into
so
it.
Good.
And at the end of the day, like if you pull back, we got a guy a fish in a pretty quick amount of time. But it's amazing. I mean, there's a reason why film crews and television crews get so bonded, because you're going to war together. And when you have those moments of victory, just like you do in like any endeavor, especially creative endeavor, they're thrilling even when they're relatively minor, because you did it together. You trusted the process. You trusted all of your co-workers. And it paid off.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's something usually is pretty unique as well. Right? Like, how many times are you going to run after a sword?
Never going to have that one again.
You're never going to have it again. You know? Like, but it might be something equally as wild. You know, it'd just be completely different.
I feel like this is connects somewhat to what I wanted to get into next, which is that, like, you know, sometimes it's Bobby Flay asking for a fish. But I guess the equivalent for 12-Sided is you have clients, like real paying clients that... you are doing a very challenging thing where you have to make something creatively sick, you know, for your own fulfillment and enjoyment and your mission statement and like the world you're in, and you have to please a client. And like, I'm sure your clients are lovely. I would never ask for you to say anything else, but like what is the challenges and pros and cons of working with some of these clients, like in 12-Sided Studios?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think you have to go into it with the mentality of like, no client wants to be difficult, right? And because if you don't, you will hate every single client you have. Like, I promise you will. Like, it's not even like they could do genuinely nothing wrong, but like, there is nothing quite like working your ass off to hit a deadline to then get like the smallest, most pernickety note back. That you're like, this doesn't make any difference. And ultimately, this is where I'm going to you know, it probably doesn't for like an audience, because the only people it actually really makes a difference to is the people that have been staring at that same brief for 6 months, right? It's like, they're the people that are going to notice. But this is where I'm going to flip it and say, but they're also the people that are paying you. So, you know, like, you kind of does matter, you know what I mean? So I think it's one of those things where trying to find that line is difficult, and always you have to go into it being like, I respect this client and I value their input and I value their thing, right? Because it's so easy otherwise. Like, it's so easy to be like, well, they're screwing me on purpose. Like, they're doing this on purpose, or that, you know what I mean? And it's just like, no, they've also just got people who are riding up their ass for something, or trying to tell them that something has to be this way or that way or whatever. And actually, like, getting into, like, all that's going to happen if you get into the, like, well, actually, you know, kind of that fight, you know, the work's going to be bad. You know, they're not going to come back. And, you know, so I think that you have to foster this thing of like, okay, they're trying their hardest, I'm trying my hardest. Obviously, there are instances where like that doesn't happen, you know, or where someone is kind of clearly, you know, taking you for a ride in one way or another. And those kind of need to be dealt with, you know, appropriately. And I usually, my feeling with them is just like, you know, okay, we do this, we tie it off, we do the best work that we can, because we never let our standards slip, and we don't ever work with that client again, you know, because there's still a world where we can come out with this where we go, but that looks sick though, you know, and that'll look good on our showreel or whatever. Like, so like, there's still an inherent value, you know, for us, and it's massively outweighed by doing a bad job, or like not turning it in on time, or, you know, making it in any way difficult, right? You need to still leave that client being like, wow, what a pleasure it was to work with 12 Sided Studios. Obviously, you're then going to leave them being like, well, I wonder why 12 Sided Studios hasn't got back to me very quickly. And be like, we're just so busy. So sorry. We actually can't do anything anymore. Like, that's always going to be the option, and always the way that I would approach it is like, it's because it is difficult. Like, it genuinely is difficult working with clients, because all of them speak a different language, right? All of them have different metrics by which they measure success. All of them need a slightly different thing. And that is kind of maddening, right? When you're like, but we're just trying to establish a pattern and a rhythm and a thing. And you kind of have to be like, cool, we have certain things that we do, certain things are in place, but ultimately it's always going to change. And that is just like a truth that you have to live in. And it can be an awful soup at times, but it's also part of the reason we all love it, because we're all a little bit sick, you know what I mean? Like, we're all a little bit like, none of, like, I fully believe that if you weren't a little bit, you know, twisted in some way, shape or form, I don't think you'd be in the creative industry, you know what I mean? You'd be like, where can I earn a stable income where I will be happy and fulfilled and I can do all of the things in my life that I want to do? You are never picking a creative industry to do those things, because even if you are on top, even if you are, you know, critical role or whatever, that is no guarantee that in 10 years time you're going to be there. Like, none. Like, there is like, you know, I could be Dwayne The Rock Johnson and I'd still be like, okay, but like, I got to keep this up. Otherwise in 5 years time, you know, I'm going to be doing the con circuit desperately hoping that people want autographs. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, that is like the reality of like, you know, the industry. Like, it just is. And so, I think all of us kind of love the fact that like, oh, this is going to be a challenge. This is going to suck for a little while, but I'm probably going to really like it. And I'm going to feel really satisfied like once it's done. So yeah, I think that's kind of how I feel like I approach working with clients.
There's also maybe a good like corollary to that of, if you find a client that you can't approach with that kind of grace, that's probably not a client that you actually want to work with. Like, if you realize for sure you can't flip that switch, don't take the job. Like,
yeah. If you're going into every meeting with like a huge gulp and like a, oh, here we go, and I'm like, well, maybe it's just not worth
that,
you know. Yeah, listen to that. Yeah, unless it's got one more zero than you're willing to turn down, listen to that, right? Because I'm also a proponent of like, hey, listen, if you can get the bag, get the bag, right? If you know you can do the job to a high standard, get the bag. Like, you know what I mean? Because that like can change, you know, everything if you get like the right kind of job or the right kind of, you know, the right kind of payout. Especially, you know, if it does pay well, because then you can do the beautiful thing, which is just like, hey, I don't want to do this, so I'm going to hire someone in to do it for me, or to like take care of this in some way, shape or form. It's just kind of tricky when they have the same thing and then you're like, oh, well, I'm the boss, so I guess I'll handle it. Oh, okay, that's fine.
This is interesting because, like, you know, like, that is the whole thing with client-facing work. Like, if we didn't need money, you wouldn't do it. You know, that's kind of, like, it's great. It's, like, collaboration is different. Like, I want to note that, like, there's still some of the people that I would say are your clients that you still would probably collaborate with. But, like, you know, that is ultimately about business sustainability. And I kind of, if you're comfortable getting into it and you don't have to share hard numbers or anything, where is 12-Sided Studios at when it comes to, like, financial viability? Like, obviously, you're still a new company, but, like, are people doing 12-Sided as their full-time job? Is it, you know, freelance, part-time for most? Where is kind of the financial and sustainable business kind of state?
Yeah, so we, I still don't quite know how we turned a profit in our first year. It was a very small profit, but we turned a profit, which meant that we were paying, by the end of our first year, we had three members of staff, like, on full-time that we were paying a full-time salary to. And a number of freelancers that we have contracted to, like, a minimum hours, mostly to give them, you know, some sustainability. It wasn't necessarily something we needed to do, but we just felt like it was the right thing to do because they'd given us a lot, you know, and we couldn't quite afford to bring them on full time. But what we could do is say, hey, like, at a minimum, we're going to pay you for, you know, this many hours kind of thing. And it's kind of helped by the fact that we have so many internal projects as well, that during months where we're not using them for client-based work, we can say, great, like, you've got 5 hours or whatever it is, or 5 days left over this month. You can make us this for Force of Extinction, or you can do that for O's and Empires, or you can create this for Three Black Halflings. So it's kind of like the ecosystem kind of lends itself very well to that. And so, yeah, we, but then the sort of craziest thing is, so we had, like, a pretty decent revenue in our first year. We made, in terms of, like, sort of revenue, in terms of, like, money in, and then, you know, we don't get to keep most of that, like, coming into the company, like, we made almost over half of that in a single job, doing the Winged Bull Tavern and working with Red Bull. And now we're working with them on, hopefully, a couple of events this year. And, you know, that was, like, a big shift, like, you know, key change for us. Like, we hadn't really worked with, like, a big singular client like that before, which kind of required, like, all hands to the pump, you know, kind of thing. And it was a really, it was, like, a really fun and enjoyable process. And then kind of started to open the door a little bit where we went, okay, like, you know, we're actually, like, we're entering into a realm where, like, not only are we, like, doing well, but, like, we're actually able to, like, forecast into the future and be like, okay, what else can we do, right? You know, if we have some capital available now, what does that look like? How do we work that? We've been doing an investment round as well for a little while. So we've been opening up for people to kind of come into the 12-sided family. It's very, you know, it's all kind of family and friends and stuff like that. We haven't yet ventured into the world of venture capital or anything. But it was definitely, like, for us, it was like, okay, we feel like we've hit on this, you know, thing now. We've found this, whether it's a secret ingredient, whether it's the team is incredible, whether, you know, I don't know, you know, what way it is, but, like, typically, and I don't know if you would agree with this, when you go to push on a door and you realize it's already open and someone's on the other side of that door being like, oh, please come take a seat, can I get you a drink? You're like, what the, like, in this industry, that doesn't happen, right? And, like, that was starting to happen. And I was going, okay, I feel like we need to seize on this opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, we need to, like, make sure that we make the absolute most of this. And so that was then what the investment round came about, was like, okay, can we give ourselves some actual financial freedom to work on these projects and to give them the kind of love and attention and care that will mean that they're not just, like, a fun little side project that we're doing, but we essentially can almost treat them like a client because we're, like, specifically using this money to, you know, fund this project and allow us to do that, you know, to do that thing. And so it's definitely meant that there's a lot of plates spinning at, like, any one time. But I think luckily, and maybe the people I work with will disagree, and you'll have to have all of them on the show to tell me that I'm a crazy person and that I shouldn't be, you know, if they had the chance, they'd get rid of me as CEO in a heartbeat. But I like to think that, like, one of my superpowers is the ability to spin these different plays. And certainly my producer and Jess and Chad have that same kind of, like, bone in their body where they, you know, are very good at, you know, seeing things from, you know, a distance and being able to like work on what needs to be worked on and kind of, you know, slowly kind of pluck away at each project and keep all those plates spinning at any one point. But it's an incredible situation, and I feel so lucky. Well, I feel so fortunate, I should say, to like be in this position, because I don't think I've ever experienced being in a position where I truly can say, what do I want to work on? Like, what do we, you know, what, like, don't get me wrong, I'm still doing the client stuff and, you know, we're still doing all of that. But like, I can genuinely be like, right, what is the next pro? You know, we're launching O's and Empires now. We kind of have this rule with our internal projects that Chad will focus on one project and I'll focus on one project in terms of our internal stuff. So O's and Empires is my thing. And then once it's up and running, I'll start to hand it off a bit more. And then I'll be like, cool, what's my next, you know, what's like the next project that I'm going to like bring forward kind of thing. And yeah, that is like genuinely like unbelievable. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm like, I'm going to squeeze as much use out of that while I can, you know, because again, like, I don't know where we'll be in a year's time. Though if it is anything like the year and a half that we've had so far, it'll probably mostly consist of what I've done thus far, which is essentially like feeling like I am a little kid trying to catch up to the Polar Express. You know, I've got my golden ticket and I'm like, I want to hear the bells. Like, you know, like I just genuinely, like, you know, it really has felt like, you know, the train left the station and I was still like doing my shoelaces up. And I was like, how did we get here? You know, and I looked around at the Winged Bull Tavern at PAX Unplugged or World's Lair on the South Bank of London or, you know, Force of people sitting, people online talking about playing Force of Extinction, and we've not even released the game yet. You know, and I'm like, how did this happen? This is like, genuinely amazing. And there's like things beyond that. You know, I remember sat in the, I was in LA and we had a meeting about Thresher, and they were just like, just so casually in the thing, they were like, cool, so it's going to go out on Thursday, the da da da. And I was like, sorry, did you just say Thursday? And they were like, yeah. This is like our two Thursday episodes. And I was like, you know, like, and it was like such a like silly thing that for like most people, they're like, what's the significance of it being on a, and I'm like, no, you don't get it. It's like the Thursday slot. This is like primetime television, baby. Like, this is, you know, this is like a big deal. So yeah, I don't know. It's a wild and kind of fun ride and definitely something that is tricky, but we're getting there, and we've got like, there is actually like another project which I was like, maybe I should talk about it. And it's one of those things where like, again, normally I'd be like, who should I check in with to say that I can talk about this? And then I realize that person is me. So I'm like, I kind of just need
to... Nice place to be in, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a super nice place to be, but maybe I'll mention it at the end. I don't want to step on your guys' questions and stuff.
No. Real quick, I do want to throw in some flowers for the Winged Bull Tavern. Because Winged Bull Tavern was like the coolest new thing at PAX. That's like my opinion, but also like that's the thing I heard about from everybody. Like, I've heard from a number of people like, they better bring that back next year. That was so much fun. I literally heard from some, I don't remember if this was on, I forget where I heard this, but there was someone who literally said like, if they don't do this next year, I'm not coming back to PAX. And I was like, that's incredible. Crazy.
That's absolutely incredible. No, I mean, thank you so much. I mean, I still kind of can't believe we pulled that off. Like, when I say I didn't have a clue what it was going to look like, because I literally just spent, we only had about a month and a half to do that. Like, from when everything kind of got ticked off and signed to it happening was like basically a month and a half. I was like, this is nuts. Surely isn't. So all I did was logistics, right? Like, all I was doing was looking at drayage and, you know, like how we got in and out of the building and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And so when I got there and we had like actors, I was like, sick. This is great. You know, awesome. But exactly. But it really needed to be like that because it was just so much to do in such a short period of time. But yeah, I really feel like I could not have been prouder of that as an achievement. And like, you know, I've got to actually, you know, it's kind of weird to be in a position where you're like, I'm giving props to a mega corporation, but like, genuinely, I have to give props to the guys at Red Bull, because they came to us with a very specific thing of like, we want to get into tabletop, because I, you know, the guys over there who were in charge of this thing were like, because we love it. Like, and I, when I say they we love it, they sat in the Winged Bull Tavern playing Magic the Gathering like the whole time they were at PAX. Like, they are like as big, if not, in fact, with one of them, we ended up getting into a like hilarious argument on like the roof and a rooftop bar in Philadelphia about blue mana in Magic the Gathering. So it was like truly like the biggest nerds.
Are they pro or anti-blue?
We were both anti-blue, but he was trying to accuse me of being pro-blue, and I was like, how dare you?
Blue's
I can't
the
stand.
Best and only no, color in Magic.
I knew you'd be pro-mana. I knew you'd be pro-blue mana. That's a different podcast. We'll talk about that another time. But we had such a wild ride putting it together, but they came to us because they were like, hey, we've seen what 12-Sided has done, and we think that you'll pull this off in a way that feels like respectful to the industry, so that people will come and they won't just be like, oh, look, it's like Red Bull showing up and it's just like a big garish, you know, Red Bull sign and everyone's like, oh, they're just here to like, you know. And it like they genuinely came to us like, we want it to feel like we care and that we understand, you know, this industry and this space. And there's not many companies that do that. Like, there's not many companies that like would essentially pay more and actually like have less of a presence. Like, they were like, don't plaster our logo everywhere, you know? Like, that's why it wasn't like the Red Bull Tavern, it was like the Winged Bull Tavern, you know what I mean? Now, it might be that now that we've established a bit more, it might be the Red Bull Tavern next time we do it, if we do it, but like, you know, I think it really matters. Like, trust is such an important element of this industry. It really matters how you come into the space and like what face you show when you come into the space, because we all have a long memory, like a really long memory. And so like, if they'd have come in the wrong way and everyone had been like, man, that tavern thing was awful, you know what I mean? But like, now that we've done this thing and everyone's talking about it, it probably will be that if, you know, when we do the next one, it'll be like, people are like already like, oh man, we've got to go to the tavern. Like, we've got to go get like a free Red Bull, or a, you know, we've got to go and play some of the games that they put on, or, you know, or like go and chill there because we paid more money just to have nice, comfortable chairs. Like, genuinely, I can't tell you how much money I signed off on spending on chairs. Because, and
oh,
this was again,
I could tell those were great chairs.
They were great chairs. They were great chairs. But that was
great tables, great chairs.
That, and again, that was like, none of that was Red Bull kind of micromanaging us. That was like us being like, okay, what matters? What matters is like having a space that is genuinely comfortable to relax in. Because I've been to these conventions and you sit there, or you walk around and you're like, cool, I'm sat on the floor eating my lunch or whatever. And I'm like tired. And I'd love to just sit down and chill with my mates for 5 minutes. And it was like, can we create that space first and foremost, and then add all the other stuff kind of on top of it? And that was like a really important part of like building that space out. So yeah, I'm glad that came across and I appreciate that.
Jesper, I guess as we start to kind of round to a close, you said there's a fun thing you get to do right now, which is you get to say, what do you want to work on? And I'm curious, do you have a question, an answer to that question right now?
Oh, do I have an answer to that question right now? I mean, I'm very much in Oaths and Empires and Rotating Heroes at the moment, in terms of like the worlds and stuff that I've built. Oaths and Empires is a real departure for me in terms of like tone. So I think I won't be able to like fully detach from it until like I see how much people hate it. Like, if people are like going into like, because my worry is like, if you're going into this being like, I love Rotating Heroes, it's the silliest, dumbest comedy podcast that I listen to, like, you know, it's like, this is a very different show. And so part of me is like slightly terrified that a lot of my fans are going to be like, bruh, are you okay? Are you going through something right now? Like, but by the same token, I'm also like really excited, because it's kind of weirdly, it's like more of the chops that I had in like drama school. And, you know, like I never really was that into comedy, right? At drama school or anything. It was always kind of drama and like Shakespeare and stuff like that first. So this feels much more like my actual wheelhouse, weirdly enough. But it'll be interesting, because, you know, you build up a perception and stuff like that. So we'll see. But no, there's like a couple of things that I'm kind of interested in. I really want to work in, I've got an idea for a project in the kids space, like serving for like children specifically within TTRPGs, which I'm really excited about. So I think that might be the next one that I turn my attention to, which again will be another complete departure, because I'm a glutton for punishment, and I want to keep everyone on their toes. But that's super fun. But one thing that I'll mention it super quickly, I don't know where it will be at at this point, but if it's, I know that we'll definitely be an open beta stage, and I can certainly invite you both to it, but we've actually been working on a project called the Tabletop Directory, which I'm really freaking proud of. It looks beautiful. And essentially the idea was, because I don't know about you guys, but with less and less people wanting to be on social media, and generally those social media companies doing more and more to keep people on the platforms, it feels like kind of organic growth has like really struggled. Like everyone I've talked to, whether they're really big shows or really small shows, just like breaking through whatever like barrier you're currently at is just like so freaking hard at the moment. Like it feels like you kind of establish a mean and then it's just like, cool, that's where you're going to be, you know, for a while. And I think part of it is just that, that organic sharing of shows just doesn't really exist as much anymore. And so we kind of looked around a few different spaces and we took a lot of lessons from this a really awesome new app called Storygraph. I don't know if either of you have heard of Storygraph before. It's an alternative to Goodreads. And essentially it's like a place where you can go and like rate your favorite books, and you can basically like, you know, you like tell them what tags you like. And if you want to, there's like an optional like AI feature, which I actually really like. And I know that's a very hot topic and very spicy thing to say at the moment, to be like, I like an AI feature. But it's just like, it basically just says like, hey, just so you know, every time you give a book 5 stars, it's normally a dark romance or whatever. So we actually think that you'll really like this book and this book. And it kind of gives you really kind of intuitive book recommendations. And my wife uses it a lot. And she's like, I hate to admit it, but the AI is like bang on every single time, because it kind of, you know, just uses essentially like the tags and the ratings and stuff that you use and or the people that are like similar to you use and like gives you some suggestions. And it, but it really means that she's finding books that she'd have never would have found in like a million years. So we took a lot of like lessons and learnings from that to basically create this directory, which I guess the easiest way to explain it is we're trying to make an IMDb for TTRPGs so that, you know, you can list on there like all of the stuff that you do, right? And all of the shows that you do. And if you want to show someone something that you've done or whatever, you can easily link them to it and you know where to find it, right? There's like a place that you can go to where it's easily accessible. And for the audience, you know, they can go and they can mark what they've listened to and what they've not listened to and what they want to listen to and stuff like that. And it will be this place where you can organically find new shows, new like creators that you enjoy in the space without having to engage with like X or the YouTube algorithm, which serves you the same 3 suggestions. Because if you type in TTRPGs on YouTube, you're going to get Dimension 20, Critical Role, or, you know, Jenny D. No offense to any of those people. I love all of them. But like, it would be cool if I could see like another option. And so, you know, it's a really cool, hopefully a really cool venture, which I think was going to allow for people to like organically find some new stuff and like some new works, and then, you know, and hopefully kind of grow beyond that into supporting, you know, like advertisers and things like that, so that you can, you know, if you want to advertise a new show, there's like a really specific place that you can do that, you know, and there's a really specific place where you can share that stuff as well. So I'll definitely send you guys the open, like, I think we're going to have an open beta in the next couple of days, but I think by the time this comes out, hopefully we'll be about ready for it to like go live to the masses. But yeah, I'm very, very excited about that one. That one's been in the works for a little while, and it's really awesome when your co-founder is like an absolute genius at coding websites. That's super helpful. Yeah,
that sounds rad. It's great to see you also doing stuff, like you're doing all this stuff that's making great stuff, but also there's this element of like helping the broader space, because yeah, as you were saying, there are very few ways to get discovered in actual play.
Yeah, it really is. But also it's like, but you know, this is the thing that I think it drives me a bit mad with some of the folks at the top, and I'm genuinely not casting aspersions at anyone here. I think it's a perfectly like reasonable thing to be focused on your own stuff when you've got that much going on and whatever. But like, if this industry dies or doesn't reach its full potential, that really hurts my company. You know what I mean? Like, that's a real like problem for us. So like, the idea of us giving back is like, you know, I'd love to say it's entirely altruistic, but I'm like, no, I want this industry to be a success. I want more people to get money in this space. Like, I want more people to create a show and for that show to be a success and for it to be able to do great things. Like, you know, like I want more shows like WinAdPod and Worlds Beyond Number and stuff like that to be able to like actually hit a level where you can go, cool, this is like a really viable career for me now moving forwards. And I don't think that that's a lack of appetite that's stopping us from getting there. I think it's a lack of like discoverability of, like, you know, the tools that are available to us are just, like, not purpose built for our little niche, our little space, like, over here. And that's what we're trying to, you know, build and hopefully, like, help bring into the industry. Because, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, guys. Like, we got to support each other.
We say the same thing all the time about the many-sided network, like our podcast network of actual play shows. Of just, these are a lot of really small shows that we just want, if we can help a little bit, if we can make their lives a little bit easier, then they can do, there's one more season of, you know, they're able to do one more season. They're able to do something a little bit bigger. They're able to pay people to do more. It's, we're not doing anything major, but I'm hoping that just like these little tiny bits, getting people just a little bit of money for the stuff that they're doing will mean we get more cool stuff like, you know, The Heart is a Dungeon, Tales Yet Told, 5 GMs in a Trench Coat.
1,000%.
Because we need more of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the appetite's there and people want it. And they just need to, they just need to find it. And they need like a hand finding it. So yeah, we'll definitely have to have a conversation and get the many-sided networker on the directory as soon as we can. That'd be cool.
So the last question we have for you is, what are you bringing to the table? Which is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation for anything. It could be inside of tabletop, outside of tabletop. It could be a book, a movie. It could be journal every day or go outside and take a breath of fresh air. Jesper Lim Cartwright, what do you bring to the table?
I'm going to tell everyone to throw away an idea that you have. Like, just like chuck it away. Like, try and detach yourself emotionally from it. And then like 2 weeks later, come back to it. Like, but just like truly just be like, hey, I'm not going to think about this. I'm not going to visit this. I'm just going to let it go. And if I never feel the urge to pick that thing back up again, then I won't. Because like, I've genuinely, it's like a gift that I gave to myself of like, when I finally had time, I gave myself headspace to not worry about a project, not worry about whether it was going to get made or not worry about whether it, like, you know, it was going to go anywhere. The freedom that it gave me to think about that project was incredible, like genuinely incredible. And so like, if you're struggling with any kind of creative endeavor or trying to create something and make it happen, put it in a drawer and just make yourself the promise that you're not going to look in that drawer until you feel this like a little spark of like excitement about that idea again. Like, and if it doesn't come back, that might be telling you something about that project. And don't feel like you're throwing it away because you might take something from that project and put it into something else. So it's never wasted. Like, it's always useful and driving you forward. But just like put it in a drawer and completely fucking ignore it until you're like, oh wait, oh, it could be this. Because it's genuinely like the most exciting and amazing feeling, and I love it. And I've been kicking myself for like the longest time that I didn't do that more.
I know that's my wife's trick for getting rid of clothes. She'll put clothes that she's not sure about in a box and put it under our bed. And in 6 months, if she can't remember what's in there, she gets rid of it.
It's a great shout. It's a great shout. If you don't miss it, then, you know, love it. Thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you having me on. This is awesome.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah,
thank you so much for coming back.
As we get out of here, you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you, and also what they should be looking for in terms of projects that are upcoming?
Yeah, for sure. It's JW_Cartwright on most social medias where you can follow me check out the 12 Sided Studios Patreon. It is a free Patreon currently. We might introduce a paid tier at some point just because, like, if people want to support us, I don't want to stop them, you know. But, like, essentially, it's just, like, our little hub. We do a little show on there called The Dodecast, which is where we talk about the projects that we've got going on and, like, what's coming up, and which I do with my co-founder, Chad Pytel, and we'll be getting, like, kind of people from inside the 12-sided orbit into that. So yeah, if you're ever kind of like wanting to know more about what we're up to, then that's a great place to go ahead. And I think right now you can get a free PDF of the quick start of Force of Extinction as well. So if you fancy checking out that really fun TTRPG that's going to be coming out later this year, then you can go ahead and get a free quick start right now and go play it with your friends. So, and then other than that, check out Odes and Empires because I put so much effort into it. And if no one watches it now, I'll be really sad. And that's on you guys. That's just on you guys listening to this right now.
It is. We've put all the links in the show notes.
Nothing,
we've made
nothing
it
like
so
a little emotional
you.
Blackmail to end the show. After all the wholesome and hopefully nice advice I've given, I'm now going to emotionally blackmail you into checking out my product.
As is your right.
And if you want even more emotional blackmail, just know that if you want to support us here at Talk of the Table, the best way to do that is to become a member of the Many-Sided Media Patreon for just a couple of bucks a month. You get ad-free episodes. You get bonus additional roundtables, bonus actual plays for our actual play show, My First Dungeon. We've put on original games, original music. There's a ton of stuff there. So if you like what we're doing, go check it out. Support us for 1 month and then promptly download all of our stuff and cancel. You'll still be doing us a huge service.
Huge solid, yeah. Oh, actually, I have a tiny quick story to tell you, which is when I was at the Winged Bull Tavern, a friend of mine came up to me after we'd chatted when we were there, and just kind of gave me this look and went, man. And I was like, what? He's like, so your life is cool. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you're just casually chatting to the guy from My First Dungeon. Like, that's just normal for you. And I was like, yeah, Brian's like the best. Yeah. But he was like, whoa, truly stoked that like I was talking. He was just like, man, it must be cool being you. You know, and I was like, yeah, it is. I get to talk to awesome people. So there you go. You had some big fans at the
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a first. That's a first level of fan kind of here.
Yeah. Brian stood up. I love it. I actually love it. But yeah, I'd be so remiss if I didn't tell you. But literally, yeah, I would like fully stoked. Just like, oh, of course you are. Why would I expect anything different? You just know everyone. And I was like, it's fun. I'll admit, it's great to know a lot of people. So there you go, man. You got a fan.
Well, howdy-do. I'm going to have a tough time doing the rest of the outro now. Okay. if you want to talk about this episode or any episode of Talk at the Table, become a member of the Many Sided Media Discord. Come chat. We love talking about games, making games, producing actual plays. There's a ton of great folks there to talk to. Rate, review, and follow Talk at the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Woo-hoo! Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Everyone.
Also, if you're Jasper's friend, send me an email and I'll give you a free year to our Patreon or something.
Yeah, if you're listening to that one guy.
That one guy.